pre-recorded from his basement. It's the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group's Bills Wire. We have a great episode for you today. Me and the boys talking about the Bills. Bills win. What was the score? 28-14?
Yeah, 28-14.
28-14. Bills win big. That is 100% more than the Giants' points, maybe. I talk about it all the time. I'm not good at math.
I think it's 50%. No, I don't know.
You know, it doesn't matter.
We're not mathematicians.
They doubled the score. There you have it. Sorry, my high school math teachers, they don't listen to this. Only my high school English teacher does. Okay, so it's D'Lo for the listeners at home.
D'Lo. Doesn't he have to when he's on it?
Yeah, when he's on it, he has no choice. But So D'Lo's not on the podcast anymore. Just some preface here. D'Lo is a teacher. Probably the bye week he'll be back, or if we decide to record on like a Sunday night one night. But yeah, D'Lo, we're recording this at 1:30 on a Monday. D'Lo has a job, so a job where he works on Monday. So
yeah, I was gonna say, I was like, I have a job.
Yeah,
I just don't work on Mondays.
Unintentional burial of Rich.
Yeah, I was like, oh, thanks. And I don't
know. Rich, you have a cool job.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a fun job. But I'm stoked to talk about the Bills today, man.
Oh yeah, I forgot why we're here.
I was like, I'll just do my own announcement.
So yeah, Bills win. We're gonna have three takeaways from that game, and then we're also gonna have some Minkah Fitzpatrick talk. But then, knowing our luck, we're recording this on Monday afternoon. I'll edit this. I'll have it set to go at 8:30 tomorrow, and he'll get traded at 10 p.m. tonight. So
oh yeah, he'll get traded to the Patriots for a 6th-round pick in 2021.
Oh, don't say that. All right, so.
It feels too real.
It's going to happen. So we'll get into this. Joining me to talk about these topics today, first, it's Rich Kowalski. Rich, how are you?
I'm doing well. Bills won. It was a good game. It wasn't terrible. It didn't feel like crap the whole game. So it was a good Sunday. Good fantasy games, too. So can't wait to talk some football.
No, not good fantasy games. Because great here, fantasy games. All right. So, joining me today also is McKenna Middlebrook. And before the debuting McKenna, and before I throw to him, we have a Bills Wire fantasy league, and I'm playing McKenna this week.
Yeah. Well, it's game's over. I already won.
Okay. Yeah. You still have Le'Veon Bell, but you already won. Because Drew Brees got negative 0.5 points.
Oh, gosh.
I was fuming during the Bills game because I was like, the Patriots defense got 33 points. Are you kidding me? But then I see Drew Brees.
Well, then Drew Brees, my quarterback got me negative points.
I wasn't
going to win anyway. I mean, I got killed this week. I'm just going to drop Drew Brees, drop Baker Mayfield, pick up Gardner Minshew, and I'm throwing in the towel for the rest of the year. And if Gardner does something for me, hey, then we're good. Then that would be the best fantasy win of all time, to come back from an 0-2 start and win the league with Gardner Minshew. So that's going to happen. I'll keep you guys updated. But McKenna, how are you? Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm doing very well. Yeah, a great Sunday. The Bills won. Manchester United won on Saturday. They're back to winning ways. So I know, like, a really just good weekend for me overall.
Oh, I forgot. That reminds me. Soccer's back from international break. So now we have to throw to Rich with everyone's favorite segment. It's Premier Rich. It's the Premier League recap, where Rich has watched every Premier League game this weekend, and he's going to fill us in on what's happened.
There's an asterisk next to that, but yes, Tottenham won. They won 4-0. Huge win. Man U won again. That's a big, got back to their winning ways. Yeah. That was big. But, I mean, I love it, though, because Saturday, Spurs win 4-0. Then Arsenal drew against Watford on Sunday, so it always makes me feel better going into the weekend, especially Bills win, Spurs win, Arsenal loses. It's fantastic. Norwich, also.
Norwich, yeah.
Beat Man City on Saturday morning. That was fantastic.
They beat them?
Yeah, yes. 3-2.
Yeah.
Wow.
Timu Pukki is a legend. Scores again. It's just
like a hockey player.
I think he's from Sweden.
He's Finnish.
Or Finnish. Yeah, Finland. Yes. Yeah.
So like, he pretty much is a hockey player.
Yeah, exactly. He's from that Scandinavian region where they're only hockey players. Or once in a while, like Ibrahimovic, they're just soccer player. And it's just like, what? That makes no sense. But yeah, fantastic, though. I mean, Norwich City, a team like got promoted this year. Not a huge amount of hope going against the number one team in the Premier League. We're usually the number one team in the Premier League and Man City. And it's just crazy. Their budgets combined, like the comparison between their budget is absurd. Mm-hmm. It's like Man City has like $130 million at least in their lineup, and then Norwich has like $3 million or something.
Yeah, it's something. $12 million overall. Yeah,
yeah,
it's wild.
Their top goal scorer, Teemu Pukki, had. I know, right? It's like I'm talking about the Islanders or something.
Teemu Pukki.
I lived in Finland for a year, so I knew of him very well because for the national team he was. Like garbage. So Finn's just like for a while hated him because he was missing easy chances, and now he's scoring against.
It was a free transfer too.
They got
a free transfer for him. It's crazy.
Now he's lighting it up.
Yeah, Premier League was great though. A lot of good stuff this weekend.
Oh yeah.
You can just hear that name in a Canadian accent if you think about it. Yeah. It's like, oh, Teemu Pukki gets the gets pucks in net.
Teemu Pukki down the wing. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Teemu. And in hockey, it's all nicknames that end with Y. So like, what, Teemy?
Teemy. Yeah, you know.
Oh yeah, Teemy got pucks in deep. You know,
Teemy
really
played
helped us out there.
playing on his ears last night, Teemy.
Oh yeah, helped us win some hockey games. So yeah, you guys watch more soccer than I do, or football. Are there any like surprise teams in the Premier League this year that are performing better than expected, or any teams that a lot of people expected to be at least decent that are just laying an egg?
Well, Arsenal has been terrible this season.
Yeah,
really?
Like, not terrible. They've just been playing really poor, and they just signed Nicolas Pepe for like
ninety million or something. Ridiculous.
90 million.
What are these names?
He hasn't scored at all for them.
He just dances around the ball, and they're like, "Oh, he's good. He's good. He's dances."
No,
and then
and then
you see that he doesn't score, and he just like shoots it over the net, and you're like, "What is this guy doing? Why did they just pay $90 million for this guy?"
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't think there's any real surprise teams. Like, Leicester City has been doing well this season, but they're since they won the Premier League a couple of years ago, they've always been up in the top half of the table. But yeah, it's been a little bog standard so far. But you know, the season is young.
Yeah, there's so much that can happen. It's there's still so many games left where it's still trying. It's like the NFL right now. You know, 2 weeks into the season, you're starting to get a picture. But same with the Premier League. It's only, I think, 4 or 5 matches into the season. It's still tough to see, you know, who's fallen, who's rising. But it's good to see a team like Norwich, the Canaries. They get, you know, promoted last year from the Championship, and they already have beat the, you know, one of the best teams in the world, which is just absurd.
I mean, the Wolves were promoted last season, and they did a similar thing. They got points against every top six team, I believe. So it's just, like, if you have enough money, you can succeed in England at least.
McKenna, I just want to go back to your usage of the phrase bog standard. I've never heard that. I was like, wow, that's incredible.
Thank you. I don't know where I don't even know where I pulled that from.
Well, I'm glad you pulled it.
Thank you.
It's great. So speaking of bog standard, that's not what's going on in Miami right now, because it's abnormal down there in Miami because they suck. They've been outscored like 110-3 or something, in or 10. I don't know. Maybe they scored a touchdown.
Yeah, I think it's 100. Well, yeah, 102-10. I think
that's not good.
Or 110-10. It's clear
analysis. Not good.
I'm not high on analytics, but I can tell you that those analytics are
losers,
bad.
Though.
Yeah,
sure, stats are for losers.
So yeah, they lost again yesterday, like 40-0 to New England. But we all expected that to happen. But what we didn't expect to happen is Minka Fitzpatrick requesting a trade out of Miami. That happened earlier in the week. Minka Fitzpatrick, of course, the second year safety, just defensive back, who they picked, I think, 11th overall in 2018. Was very good last year, had 80 tackles.
My cat was moving couches.
My cat's in my room right now, so if I have to get up mid-podcast, it's because I'm attending to my cat. But anyway, so Minkah Fitzpatrick had 80 tackles, 9 pass deflections, 2 picks last year. He was a bright spot on a Miami team that wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. And this year, he hasn't looked great, but neither has Miami. They seriously look like an XFL team. Look, there is only one player signed to the XFL right now, Landry Jones, and I think the XFL All-Star team could probably beat Miami. Oh. Just Landry Jones. Oh. Playing every position, awful. Every down. That'd be a good game to watch, though. So, anyway, Minkah Fitzpatrick wants out, and look, I'm sure when that news broke, all other 31 NFL GMs picked their phones up, and none of them got through because they were all just calling the same phone line. So none of them could probably get through to the Dolphins GM. I don't even know who it is, but he's not doing a good job. But so let's just discuss for a moment the possibility of Minkah Fitzpatrick coming to Buffalo, because I'm mixed on this. I wrote an article just a few hours after that news broke last week about how Minkah Fitzpatrick would add something unique to the Bills' defense, and he would kind of put the unit over the edge. And now that I've thought about it for a few days, I don't know if I want the Bills to trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick. So I'll talk about the pros first here. Minkah Fitzpatrick is one of the best young defenders in the NFL. As I said, 80 tackles last year, 9 pass deflections, incredibly versatile. If you want to put him at safety, you can, and he'll be great. You want to put him at nickel corner, he's one of the best nickel corners in the league already. And I don't think he's really played boundary corner in the NFL, but I would be surprised if you stuck him out there and he was inept, just because he's so good at the other two secondary positions. Mm-hmm. I would be surprised if you put him out wide at corner and he just can't do it, just because he's too talented of a player to not be able to do that, in my opinion. So if you wanted him to play boundary corner, I'm sure he could as well. So in Minkah Fitzpatrick, you're getting an incredibly talented, incredibly versatile player, and also you're getting a very cheap player. I wrote in my article that any team that acquires Minkah Fitzpatrick would only have to pay him $5.9 million over the next 3 years. Wow. So you are getting a potentially game-changing defender for a very cheap price tag. Obviously, you'll have to trade a lot to get him, but you're getting him at a cheap price. And in the Bills' defense, I think he'd be very fun, because this Bills' defense, look, it's very good. It's versatile when it wants to be. It's very aggressive. But if you add a player like Minkah Fitzpatrick, that just... Like I wrote in my article, it adds a different dimension to the Bills' defense, because not only are you getting him, but that allows you to do more things with your other defenders. You can stick him at nickel corner because Taron Johnson's injured more often than he's not. So you can have him as the starting nickel corner. You can have him at safety, let Micah Hyde play nickel corner, or put him at safety and have Jordan Poyer come in as an edge rusher, because Jordan Poyer, he's not asked to rush the passer a lot, but when he's used as a pass rusher, he's very good. So you can put him at either safety spot and then let either Hyde or Poyer do other things, or you can put him as a boundary corner if you want to. So that is just, he's a really versatile piece that would be really fun in this Bills defense, and would not only be good in his own right, but would also allow the Bills to do other things with the defense. But then there's other issues. One of the reasons why he's unhappy in Miami right now is that they're asking him to play multiple roles. They're asking him to play safety and nickel. And that kind of goes against everything I just said. Because if he only wants to play one role, and then the Bills bring him in, they're like, oh, you're going to play nickel, boundary, and safety, so we can do all these other things. He might be like, oh, that's great, but also, I don't want to do that. I just got out of that. I kind of just want to focus on nickel, or I want to focus on safety, etc. And then also, apparently the Dolphins' asking price is a first-round pick, at least. They're not going to look at any offers that don't include a first-round pick. And then if you're Miami and Buffalo comes to you and you're faced with the possibility of having to play this potentially game-changing defender who's only 22 years old, who's on a very reasonable contract twice a year for at least the next 3 or 4 years, if their offer is a first-round pick, I'm going to say no. You're giving me a 1 and a 3 or a 4, at least. Maybe a roster player. If I'm giving you this and you're going to be able to pay him and I'm still paying his guaranteed money, no, you're giving me a first-round pick and more. So if I'm the Bills, I think they're a playoff team this year. We'll get into that later. So that first round pick this year is probably 20, like at, from 20 onward, and then a third or a fourth. So just, I don't know if that's a price I pay for a versatile nickel corner, I guess. I don't know if I want to pay a first-round draft pick. Am I getting a Minkah Fitzpatrick with the 23rd pick in the draft who can do all the things that Minkah Fitzpatrick can? I don't know, but is that a risk that I want to take to give up that opportunity to get a defender who might not be happy with his potential role here? I don't know. There's a discussion to be had here, so I'll go to you, Rich. How do you feel about the possibility of bringing in Minkah Fitzpatrick?
I mean, there's no doubt that Minkah Fitzpatrick is a very dynamic defensive secondary player, and he's tall too. He's able to play different positions, like you're saying, whether or not he wants to or not. It would really add and further solidify the Bills' pass defense as like something that is just legendary at this point. Yeah. If they added that piece to it, but I just don't see the Bills wanting to give up a first round pick, at least for a situation like that, when they know that going into the next offseason they're going to need to address some more needs on offense with receiver, with other positions on the line. Potentially you want to get some more offensive side of the ball pieces, but Fitzpatrick, especially getting that, you know, asking for a first round pick for that, that's a lot of money. And I just also don't see the Dolphins wanting to really go down from that price if it's a divisional team where they're trading away someone that's going to help someone they're facing twice a year. It seems like it would be, you know, wise of Bean to call Miami and see what they're asking and see what they could potentially work them down a little bit. But I just don't see him ending up going to Buffalo. I think more of a possible destination could be Kansas City, because they really need some help in the secondary long term. If they want to make a run and they want to beat the Patriots, they're going to need some secondary help. But it would be amazing, but yeah. I don't think it's going to happen.
And just to add to that quickly before I go to you, McKenna, the Bills don't need Minkah Fitzpatrick. This defense is arguably the best in the league already. The pass defense was the best in the league last year, and it's one of the best in the league right now. They do not need a Minkah Fitzpatrick, especially when you have young players at the positions he would play. I mean, Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde are both in their primes. Taron Johnson, when he's healthy, is a very, very good nickel corner. Levi Wallace is a very good boundary corner. So if you do bring in Minkah Fitzpatrick, you're kind of faced with an embarrassment of riches. You kind of have too many good players than you know what to do with. Mm-hmm. Because if you bring in Minkah, you're going to have to leave Taron off the field occasionally, or Levi Wallace. Having too many good players is a problem that the Bills have never had, or at least not in my lifetime, so that would be cool. But you don't need Minkah, and I don't see Brandon Bean, who values draft picks so heavily, I don't see him trading a first-round pick for a player that they don't really need. So, McKenna, how do you feel about this?
As everyone's saying, he's an amazing player. He's a great talent and would bring so much to the defense. And what we've seen in McDermott's defense is versatility in like, especially for DBs, like he loves having multiple players play different positions, and Minkah Fitzpatrick is like the definition of that sort of player.
Yeah.
But Brandon Bean loves to build through the draft. He has said that I don't even know how many times. They're a team that'll build through the draft. So if they have to give up a first round pick, I don't think they'll make the trade at all. I think he'll probably end up in a place like Kansas City. I think that's, if I'm Kansas City, I'm trying to go all out, because he'll bring Kansas City an extra edge. And I could also see him going to Seattle to kind of rebuild the Legion of Boom, you know?
But that'd be an interesting move.
Yeah, because they just traded for Jadeveon Clowney. And if to make another move like that, that would be wild for them to do.
Oh, yeah.
And it would definitely put them over the edge. And they in the NFC West. So yeah, I don't think he's coming to Buffalo. It'd be amazing if he did, but I don't think he's going anywhere in the AFC East, honestly, because the Jets don't want to give anything up, and the Patriots, they don't really give out first round picks that often.
Yeah.
Imagine if Seattle trades a third for Clowney and then like a first plus for Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Oh my god.
I mean, we've just spent we just spent like 10 minutes talking about Minkah Fitzpatrick, but like I would rather Clowney. But hey, if Miami somehow, hey, I think they got a lot for Laremy Tunsil and Kenny Stills. Sure. So if they're somehow able to get a first plus for Minkah Fitzpatrick, hey, I don't know why you trade Minkah Fitzpatrick, but if you get a first round pick plus other assets, if you really want to get rid of him, that's not a bad haul to get back. But I don't think the Bills are going to trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick. I think it'd be really fun. It would make that defense incredible. I don't think any team in the league could really hold a candle to that defense, just because it's already one of the best right now at a young player who's one of the best at either position he plays, like Minkah Fitzpatrick, and that's just an over-the-top move there. But for potential teams, I could see the Giants going for him, the Eagles. I think he's a New Jersey kid, so either one of those teams is a homecoming for him. And I mean, the Giants are a rebuilding team, as we saw. So if they can bring in a 22-year-old potential face of their defense who's a character fit, a real culture setter, a tone setter. So, but if you're in New York, I mean, your pick's going to be high this year. So I try to get away with a second there. I do not trade a potential top five pick for Minkah Fitzpatrick. And then Eagles would be fun. And then, Rich, you said it a few weeks ago about Clowney, but like you said, Clowney seemed like a Redskins move. I just think any dumb trade seems like a Redskins move.
They could be going for a cornerback, though, too. They need one as well.
Yeah, they do.
So, like, two first-round picks from Washington to Miami for Minkah. And, That'd be great.
Yeah, and they send Darius, guys.
yes. Dwayne Haskins. That would be so much fun.
They do not shy away from that, but I don't even know if Dan Snyder is making the decisions in that building anymore. I think they took away his control.
He took away his own control?
Yeah.
I can't do this. I put
some
dumb.
Some bumpers up for him. Yeah. Please. Only do contracts, Dan.
Yeah. Hey, dude, something's going to happen with Minkah. I don't think he's finishing the season in Miami. I don't think a lot of the players on Miami's roster are finishing the season in Miami because they're just... they're inept over there. Brian Flores can say he's not tanking all he wants, but like
his players don't think that.
No. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. His players, like most of it, or not most of, but a number of his players request the trades already. So
yeah, after the first week,
it's only gonna get worse from there. Really,
only gonna get worse. So yeah, Miami, man. We're going to talk about a better team, a more fun team to watch, and that's the Buffalo Bills.
What a world we live in.
What a world.
A fun team and the Buffalo Bills have never been in the same sentence since 1999.
Very true. So Bills win 28-14 over the New York Giants. They went into MetLife Stadium for the second consecutive week and rolled over the Giants in the Super Bowl whatever matchup. I wasn't alive for that.
I wasn't either. I'm turning 22, and I don't remember the Bills being good ever, except for Kyle Orton.
Kyle, that was a good year. I'm not the youngest person at Bills Wire anymore. Oh. Damn, I'm getting old, man. I'm getting old. Years keep coming. Whatever. Well, that's a tone setter for this podcast. Anyway, so Bills win. I've said that 10,000 times this podcast already, but Josh Allen played well. Frank Gore, Devin Singletary played well. The whole offense was rolling. And then the defense, after the first drive where they let Saquon Barkley pick up 55 yards on four rushes and a touchdown, they kind of shored up, except for a third quarter drive or a fourth quarter drive. I don't remember, but the Giants scored on it. But outside of that, the defense was good throughout. So this is just, it's a game that the Bills really should have won. If they are the team that a lot of like fans and pundits think they are, and they are a potential wild card team, a fringe wild card team, I don't care if you're home or away, you should beat the Giants. And they did handedly. So now they roll into New Era Field next week, home game against Cincinnati to take on the NFL's leading passer and Andy Dalton. That's a weird sentence to say, but so yeah, let's we'll talk about our takeaways from the game. Mm-hmm. It was a good game, and I'll go to Rich first with his number one takeaway from this Bills win.
Oh, my number one takeaway. I mean, the faces, the new faces, you know, they've gotten in the last year and a half, 2 years on offense have just really accelerated and really started to perform well. I mean, the Bills had 5 third down conversions yesterday, and all 5 of them came from either Beasley or Brown. 9 of their top 10 plays on offense came from guys that were signed in the last year or drafted in the last year. It's just good to see that these new guys that, you know, they brought in with a decent amount of money are really adding to Allen's game and are able to give him confidence that we didn't really see last year with such a young receiving core and inexperienced receiving core. Now you add these somewhat steadier hands, guys that have played with good quarterbacks, and, you know, go out there and it's really helping Allen. I mean, Beasley and Brown combined, their cap hit is this year is $14.4 million. And those are your top two receivers right now. Mm-hmm. And they're 2-0 with that. It's huge. Allen's percentage, too, has gone up since last year. I mean, last year's at like 52% yeah. completion percentage. Now he's at 64%. It just goes to show that a lot of these guys in there that are new are just really helping him out. I mean, you can even talk about Isaiah McKenzie on the touchdown. Isaiah McKenzie, they didn't sign until November last year. He was a guy mm-hmm. they claimed off of waivers from the Broncos.
Yep.
They're just a lot of new guys making good plays. Singletary, Gore, Mitch Morris. I mean, I don't know what that holding call was. Yeah. That was a phantom hold. Still confused about that. But, I mean, he's had a pretty good season so far, too. He hasn't had any – I mean, that was the first time we heard his name called. It's just good to see, though, that – I mean, even Dawson Knox on that Allen sling. It was like – what was that? Like 20 yards to Dawson Knox on the run. Just first Dawson Knox catch of his career, and Allen just throws it on a rope, but right where Knox needs to be and right where Allen wants to throw it. It's good. These new faces are finally clicking, and hopefully they keep up this, you know, this momentum with these new guys, because it's a totally different culture than what it was a couple of years ago, and you could kind of see the momentum changing in the Bills' favor. It's going to be fun to watch the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'll admit that I slept on John Brown throughout the offseason. When they signed John Brown and Cole Beasley like back to back.
Same day. Yeah. It was crazy. I was crazy. I was on my phone. I saw that Bill signed. I think it was John Brown first.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, Bills just need one more receiver. And then as I was saying,
moments later,
ask and you shall receive.
Yeah, they signed Cole Beasley. I was like, oh, all right. This is great.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then after, I mean, out of those two, I was like, oh, Cole Beasley makes a lot of sense, because Allen last year, he did not have that just reliable slot receiver that if you are in need of just a check down option, because last year, if he didn't have anyone open, he was running away within 3 seconds. This year, you don't see him doing that often. A lot of his runs have come off designed runs. Maybe that's not the case, actually. There's been a few designed runs this year, though, which wasn't the case last year. When he was running, it's because he was running for his life. This year, when he's running, it's because he actually has linemen in front of him and they're designed, so that's good to see. But then just Cole Beasley, he was brought in because Josh Allen lacked that guy who can create separation off the line of scrimmage and get open quickly. They lacked that guy last year. So this year, getting him that guy who he can get the ball to quickly so he doesn't have to run for his life, I thought that was a good signing right off the bat. I thought that would make a lot of sense if it panned out, and it has panned out thus far. But John Brown, I was just like, that's a lot of money to give to a receiver who's had one good year of production. And granted, last year he was very good with Flacco. Then when they made the change to Lamar Jackson, who was not a throwing quarterback last year, this year he looks incredible. But last year he could run. That was kind of his thing. Same with Josh Allen. But anyway, so when he was with Lamar Jackson, his production dipped. He would have had another good year had they kept Flacco in, but then the Ravens wouldn't have made the playoffs probably. So anyway, I got sidetracked. But John Brown, I thought it was a lot of money to give to a receiver with 1 year of production. And I thought on paper it made sense. Get a fast receiver who can just beat the defensive back to the goal line, and then Josh Allen can get it there from wherever they're lined up on the field, and there it is. But John Brown has proven in these first two games that he's more than just a deep threat. Yes, he is a deep threat, but also he's a good route runner. He can create separation. I'm honestly surprised with how good John Brown has looked through these first two games. And then, Rich, as you say, just new additions across the line. Mitch Morris has looked good. John Feliciano's come out of nowhere, and he's yeah. looked good. He's looked aggressive. And that's something you
so
want.
So Cody Ford, though.
Yeah.
Dude, I was going to get to Cody Ford.
Yeah.
I don't want to say the Bills have a problem at right tackle. Not yet, but I haven't been impressed by either Cody Ford or Ty Nsekhe yet.
Mm-hmm.
Cody Ford had 3 or 4 penalties yesterday.
Yeah.
Which
well,
that
the one was the him sticking up for Josh Allen, which I think most fans can get behind, but he's just been making some stupid mistakes, and that's like mm-hmm. the one issue, I think, with the offense is the line, because they have been making a lot of just dumb mistakes. Nothing like game-killing or anything, but they do get a lot of penalties, which is frustrating. I think against the Giants last week, or last Sunday, Josh Allen, I think it was a designed run. It was like a QB draw, mm-hmm. and he got the first down, but I think there was that was a hold against Mitch Morse.
Yeah, yeah. The phantom hold.
But yeah, there are still like mistakes like that where you know Josh Allen or Frank Gore or Devin Singletary will make a good play, mm-hmm. but Deion Dawkins will have a hold.
Oh, Deion, man.
Deion's something.
He's a personality. Stir it up. To say the least. Stir it up.
You already schnow.
Got to stir up the mac and cheese, wet and juicy. Gee, I love Deion Dawkins, man. He, like you said, he's a character. But I thought the line was good, or, you know, I'll say good against the Jets. They were bad yesterday. I think it was maybe the first offensive drive, Cody Ford just let somebody run past him and sack Allen. And I wrote in Slack, I was like, put it in Secchi right now. I don't even want to see Ford for the rest of the
Ford's
game.
Ford's a bust.
Yeah.
Put that game. Get him out.
I think Ford could be good, but I mean, the story about him all along has been he could be a decent tackle, but he'd be a good guard, a potential pro bowler or all pro at guard. And the issue there is, look, I think that was their plan. I think they wanted Ford at right guard and Insecki at right tackle. And then when Insecki went down in the preseason for a few weeks, they had to switch Ford back out to tackle, put Feliciano in at guard, and then they got something out of Feliciano that they didn't think they were going to get. Feliciano just kind of showed, hey, I got this job by default because you had to put Ford back at tackle, but you can't take me out. So that, I think, that's just speculation on my part, but people have been asking why are Ford and Insecki still battling for the right tackle spot. It's because Feliciano just showed that he's a good right guard and that you really can't take him out of the starting lineup when he hasn't done anything to lose the job. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, just in general, like you said, Rich, the new additions have looked pretty good. I still don't understand. He's not a new addition. I still don't understand why Pat DeMarco's out wide catching passes. But
oh, gosh, yeah.
Here he is.
He was about to bust a great play, but the sideline got
the pesky sideline
just got
got in his way. You hate to see it.
Yeah, yeah.
Patrick
DeMarco, he was
blazing.
He's about to put the moves. Yeah, but it's weird to see the fullback catching.
They're just trying to justify paying him, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's making the catches, so he's not making any drops, so.
He got a carry yesterday, too.
Yeah.
He got a half a yard.
Yeah.
Hey, good for him.
I think that was his first carry in quite some time.
And quite, at least, yeah.
At least
quite some time, yeah. So, McKenna, do you have anything just before we move on to your takeaway, just about the new additions here? Because your takeaway is a new addition as well. So.
Yeah, my takeaway is a new addition. But, the additions of Cole Beasley and John Brown, we're not going to really talk about it that much more because – that's what everyone's talking about, but they have been phenomenal. And John Brown, working the intermediate to short routes has been the thing that's probably impressed me the most out of all of them, because the thing coming in with John Brown is just that he is a deep threat.
Mm-hmm.
And you already had Robert Foster, who's a deep threat, so it seemed like they kind of were in each other's way. But the fact that he can work the catch and run a little bit, you know, has mm-hmm. been helping Josh Allen a lot. And he's been, showing his hands a couple times throughout the game, which pretty impressive. I think it was the Jets game where he had that nice grab over the middle of the field. I think they're definitely going to benefit Allen throughout the course of the season, for sure.
I agree. And I remember I was listening to an old episode of One Bills Live. You're probably asking, why would you subject yourself to listening to One Bills Live? I don't know. I was a Bills employee for a few months, so I had to listen to
stuff for glasses on and
exactly.
listen to some John Murphy.
Yeah, I had to listen to some stuff for interviews. But then Chris Brown was on, and he was like, I wonder if this
the Chris Brown?
The Chris Brown. My former employer, Chris Brown. Oh, no, not Rihanna Chris Brown. No.
Hey, now.
What?
I worked for rapper Chris Brown. No. Bill's insider Chris Brown was on.
Okay.
And he was saying, I wonder if how the Bills have built this receiving core, if it works out, is a way that more teams are going to build their receiving cores moving forward. Don't give the big money to one guy. Get a bunch of not traditional number one receivers. Get number two and threes elsewhere, and then just have a well-rounded receiving core for cheap. You can use the money to build your roster elsewhere, and you're still going to have competent pass catchers. So I don't know. It's worked out through two games. Brown and Beasley both, they make a lot of money, but as far as good wide receivers go, they're moderately priced. So I think the receiving core has looked good, which is something I haven't said in a few years, but Brown and Beasley are showing that, hey, they're worth every penny they're getting paid right now. So McKenna, speaking of being worth every penny someone's getting paid, Devin Singletary is not making a lot of money, and he's playing really well. So yeah, not yet. So how do you let's go to your takeaway here.
My takeaway is that Devin Singletary is an NFL caliber running back already. Like, throughout the past two games, he has proved that he should get the ball more than six times a game. He has, like, in the preseason, we all fell in love with Christian Wade because he was just scoring touchdowns. And obviously that's not anything you can really sustain, but I kind of have the same feeling with Devin Singletary. I just feel like he's going to make a big play whenever he gets the ball, which obviously won't happen, but he is a very smart runner. He's not very fast, but he can make everyone miss in any situation, which gives a lot of comparisons to people, like, compared him to LeSean McCoy, RIP.
Gone but not forgotten.
But he reminds me more of Le'Veon Bell in the way he runs.
Yeah.
Where when he gets the ball in the backfield, he just hops around for a little bit.
Yeah, he's patient.
Yeah, he's a patient runner, unlike Shady, who just he had his
Shady's
moments.
too patient.
He's too patient. But Singletary just has a good patience about him. Then when he hits the hole, he isn't afraid to run someone over or make someone miss. And he looks so just, like, ready to be an NFL player, which I was surprised when the Bills drafted him. I was like, Devin Singletary, like, who is this guy out of Florida Atlantic University? But he's proved himself to be a very quality NFL running back. And I think Buffalo needs to give him more touches for the offense to be successful, because he makes plays, whether it be in the passing game or the running game.
Less DeMarco, more Singletary.
Yes, throw it out to Singletary out in the flats instead of, Big Pat.
Yeah, I have to give a shout-out to Jeremy Uhas here, Bills Wire podcast host. After Devin Singletary declared for the draft, like everyone else, I had never heard of Devin Singletary. Or I had heard, here and there, but yeah. I wasn't high on Devin Singletary. And then he said, in the Slack after he declared, he's like, look, Devin Singletary, this is the guy I want. I don't care where they take him. The Bills have to draft Devin Singletary. And then I watched some tape, and I was like, oh, my God, this guy is just insane. That was my takeaway from watching Devin Singletary's tape, was like, he looks like a young LeSean McCoy. He's got just the moves. Again, he's not the quickest guy, but he's got the moves that he'll make you miss, and then he can walk to the end zone. So,
Which he kind of did on his touchdown.
He did, yeah.
And he also had help from Dawson Knox, who has been into a really good blocker. I was expecting him to be more of a pass catcher, which he has only has one catch, but he's been turning into a really solid blocker, which has been nice. But yeah, Singletary has moves. Every move you can imagine can make everyone miss, and like anywhere on the field, it seems like. He probably should have had a touchdown against the Jets in their first game. But he just made the wrong cut. Yeah,
he cut into the guy.
Right into him.
And then you could just go straight.
Just keep going. Would have been,
Oh, there's two people over here. Let me say hi to them.
let me see if I can beat them.
Hey, how are you?
But yeah, I think as the season progresses, it's going to be Singletary that is the starter instead of Frank Gore.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, Frank Gore had a very good game. They're two different style of runners, which is, I think, good for every running back group to have.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to be the case. They're just getting Singletary's feet wet right now. And I've seen people complaining on Twitter, like, why is Frank Gore the number one back? And it's like, because their other running backs played two NFL games.
Frank Gore has been playing for 15 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Respect.
Yeah. Look, by the end of the year, week 10 even, Singletary is going to be getting the majority of the snaps, and Frank Gore is going to be the situational back that he's been throughout the past few years that he's thrived in, and that what's really continued his career. So I really, like you said, he's going to get more touches in general as the season progresses, and I can't wait for that because seriously, he's been making defenders look foolish nearly every time he touches the ball. So he did injure his hamstring yesterday, and I'm sure by the time this goes out, we'll have some sort of injury update on him. But
as the people are saying in the broadcast, he was walking around in the sideline on the sideline. So hopefully, it just was. You know, the Bills are already winning. Let's not risk him getting like further injured. Yeah. So yeah, I hopefully it's a minor injury, but.
Yeah, I think that was the case. They were killing out the clock at that point, so they were just like, "Here, we're not gonna give you the ball if you're just gonna fall down. We'll let Frank Gore do that." That's kind of what he's been doing for 15 years. So, but anyway, look, Frank Gore. I like Frank Gore, but this goes into a hockey take here. I don't know if you guys like hockey, gosh. But look, Frank Gore is kind of like Marty Brodeur, in that. Marty Brodeur was a good goalie, but he played for 20 years, so you're bound to break some records. So, like, people say that, like, Marty Brodeur is the greatest of all time. It's like, no, he was just good for a long time. Right. Like, with Frank Gore. Can you say Frank Gore is in the ranks of Barry Sanders, Thurman Thomas, Emmett Smith? No, I don't think he's that talented, but he's just been good for 15 years. Yeah. So that's why he's fourth all time in rushing. That's just my Frank Gore take. But anyway,
I mean, I don't disagree. Like, he'll still go into the Hall of Fame just due to the longevity of his career. Like, that's something you have to applaud. Like, an NFL running back playing for 15 years is wild.
It's insane. It is seriously insane. And like I said, I think he's good, but I want them to pass the torch to Devin Singletary. And a doctor replied to Brad yesterday. Brad Gelber tweeted out the video, and he was like, "Oh, it looks like it'd be 1 to 6 weeks." So let's hope. Let's hope Singletary returns 1 week from now and not 6 weeks from now. But like you said, he was walking around on the sideline afterwards, so hopefully he's good. Rich, do you have anything to add on Devin Singletary?
Little known fact. Frank Gore, you talk about Frank Gore, not Singletary, but Frank Gore, his nickname is the Inconvenient Truth.
Like the movie?
What?
That is a movie? That is from Pro Football Reference. It says his nickname is the Inconvenient Truth. I mean, I guess is that something to do with his age?
It was the Al Gore movie. There we go.
It is the Al Gore movie.
There we go. The Al Gore movie.
Oh, yeah. What? It's about climate change. Yeah.
Yeah.
An Inconvenient Truth or something.
Yeah, it's an Inconvenient
Truth. So,
Frank Gore,
he against climate change?
Like Frank Gore breaking flat earther.
Yeah, climate change hoaxer. But no, that's a good nickname to have.
Yeah, that's powerful.
That's a great nickname. Yeah, the Inconvenient Truth. Franklin Gore. Oof. It doesn't sound as tenacious. Franklin Gore.
Gore is just a great last name, though. Like, that just...
Gore is a good last name.
Yeah.
I've put someone, or I wrote about, or I didn't write about anyone, I said in the Slack the other day, some Bill has a crazy middle name,
and
I completely forgot who it is.
It's...
Yeah. Mick Xavier! Who was it, though? Andre Roberts!
Yes.
Andre McXavier Roberts.
That's...
Andre McXavier Roberts.
That's a great middle name, right there.
Why doesn't he go by McXavier? It's like Tremaine Edmonds.
Roll off the tongue.
Tremaine Edmonds. His first name is not Tremaine. His first name is Faison.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, his name is Faison Edmonds.
That is... okay, I'm taking everyone's names now.
Yeah.
Faison Xavier Middlebrook. Rolls off the tongue.
Yep.
But like,
meanwhile, Brown's name is just John Brown.
I have to check something. Tredavious White has to have a crazy middle name, right? No, he doesn't have one. Or at least it's not on Wikipedia. But, so there we have it. Faison Edmonds. That's the takeaway from the Devin Singletary talk is Faison Edmonds.
Cole Beasley's middle name is Dixon.
Dixon. He's releasing a rap with a DMC.
What?
No way.
Yeah, we're going to have a full review. Yeah, when that drops.
If that is not the Bills' touchdown song, once it's out, they might as well just release him.
We'll get Anthony Fantano on the podcast to give us an official review.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
That would be great. That'd be a big get for the podcast.
That would be a huge get for the podcast.
First guest, Anthony Fantano.
For those who don't know, he reviews albums, music.
He's the internet's busiest music nerd.
Yeah. Well, Nardwar is pretty good, too. Have you ever seen Nardwar?
No.
Nardwar Serviette. He's this music. He's been doing it since the 90s. He did Nirvana too. He does interviews and he does this insane research about the musicians or celebrities, and he just finds out all this crazy stuff that they never thought, you know,
like their
a
first
guy
names.
Interviewing with. Yeah, exactly. But like, they must like talk to their family or something. He had a Seth Rogen one I was watching yesterday. He's just like pulling up all this stuff about Seth Rogen from high school, and like Seth Rogen went to high school with Nathan Fielder. And like yeah.
Really?
These other, yeah, like three other people that are now like comedy writers and yeah. stuff. It's crazy. But wow. Yeah, he just brings up these crazy, really eccentric guy. You should watch some of those. They're great.
He needs to interview Cole Beasley.
Good artist on there.
Yeah, get Cole Beasley.
Yes,
on there.
I was thinking that. Oh, gosh. Cole Beasley, your middle name is Dixon.
How does that make you feel?
Have you guys ever listened to Cole Beasley's rap album?
No.
It wasn't bad.
I heard he was like decent for an NFL player. Like,
yeah,
he's probably
he's not bad. No,
he's decent for an NFL player.
Yeah, I don't know. He's no Damian yeah. Lillard. Who?
I mean, yeah, Damian Lillard is out here putting out
like Marvin
bangers.
Bagley.
Yeah. Bangers.
Marvin.
Like, Portland loves it too.
Yeah.
They.
Oh yeah.
Dame. It's Dame Town.
It is.
I mean, it's Dame time in Dame Town. There's a billboard next to the arena on a, you know, kind of like a giant silo billboard of Dame. It's great. He's the legend here.
Yeah, he's great.
We're getting really sidetracked, yes. But hey, I'll let's continue down the tangent. I just think that's so cool. It's like in the NBA, you see all these players leaving whatever market right. to go to LA, New York, mm-hmm. just the money, wherever the money right. is. Then you have guys like Donovan Mitchell who are like, no, or Donovan Mitchell
well,
in
same.
Utah. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. Donovan Mitchell's an example, but like Damian Lillard, who's like, yeah, I fell in love with my small market. I'm going to stay here.
And
I
he's
love
an
it here.
Dude, too. Yeah. He could yeah. easily be like, oh, I want to go back to the Warriors or I want to, mm-hmm. I want to play for them. But no.
Maybe he, yeah.
That's good great. Thing. And you see it, I mean, you see it in Buffalo even to an extent. Obviously, football is a much more team-oriented sport mm-hmm. than basketball, I guess. NBA is a superstar-driven league. NFL yeah. is to an extent, but it's 53 guys.
Yeah.
And then, like, Jerry Hughes has kind of committed himself to Buffalo in that way. Kyle Williams yeah. did. So
Brian Mormon.
Brian Mormon, huge example.
Ryan Lindell, legends. Legends of Buffalo.
Oh, man. I remember I worked at a pizzeria in Orchard Park. I won't name the name, but...
no, name drop.
Roast
Capelli's Pizzeria. I used to work there and...
Frank Young's.
Yeah, right next to Frank Young's. I would work there and one day, Ryan Lindell, like, you know, 30 minutes after the game, doesn't even, you know, takes a shower, goes to Capelli, sits in the dining room, eats a slice of pizza and some wings, and I go out there to, you know, grab the cups or dirty stuff and wash them, and he's just out there watching highlights on ESPN of his kick, and I was like, this is so weird.
What a guy.
Surreal.
What a legend.
It was like, I think it was after they beat the Seahawks or something at home, and he made like a game-winning kick.
Nice.
I was like, this guy is so humble. Look at him. Just he just looked like an pizza. Average 40-year-old dude that just was there getting a slice of pizza, and I was like, oh, yeah, that guy plays football.
That guy just did that.
Exactly.
So yeah, we're 47 minutes deep here, so I might as well get to my takeaway here. My takeaway is Josh Allen. Look, I've said on multiple episodes of this podcast that Josh Allen's best game last year was the season finale against Miami. I think this might have been his best professional game. He looked incredible. I'll say
for sure
his most complete game. He was just look, if he could play like this every week, Bills are a playoff team. He is a bona fide, not a bust. Yeah. He's a bona fide starting quarterback. Finished the game 19 of 30 for 253 yards and one touchdown. That is 1 yard short of his career high, which he set last week. So, look, 19 for 30, that's a 63% completion percentage. Look at that quick math. I talk mad trash on my math skills.
There
I just did
was.
That quick maths.
Beautiful.
But, And look, like five or six of those throws were throwaways. They weren't even inaccurate passes.
He had a
the
drop
majority.
From Zay Jones, a classic.
Yes,
drop.
A classic. Yeah, I'm gonna say it. Zay Jones is bad. Moving on.
I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah,
you're gonna get Bob Jones messaging you.
Good. Be a guest on the podcast, please. We can debate this. But Josh Allen. look, like I said, five or six of those were just throwaways, which, again, goes into why he's becoming a more complete quarterback. You saw multiple times yesterday he wasn't rolling out and throwing it into the middle of the field and playing hero ball. When there wasn't anything there, he was just throwing the ball away. Mm-hmm. And when he was rolling out and throwing it into the middle of the field, he was only doing that when he knew, when he trusted his ability, I'm going to make the perfect throw to get it here. I know I'm going to do this. And he did it time and time again. I think he had two or three plays yesterday where he rolled out and bombed it over there, or not even over the middle, but he bombed it down the field and found a wide open guy. The John Brown play, which led to the game-winning touchdown, was incredible. Mm-hmm. I just thought this was a very well-rounded game from Josh Allen. Also picked up 21 yards on the ground. And that's another thing, is he's not relying on his legs to pick up the yards and to put the Bills in scoring positions. Last year, that was, like, at the end of the year, that was the only thing that was driving the Bills' offense, was Josh Allen's scrambles. Now they've used his athleticism as a strength and to their advantage. Like I said earlier, they're giving him designed runs. They're using that his running ability to move the chains when they have to and to get yards when they have to. But really, they've just designed this offense around getting him quick looks, open looks. Jesus, I just had a weird noise.
You all right over there?
I don't know. We'll see if I make it.
But like to get Transformer blow, and it didn't happen.
Yeah. they've designed this offense around making it the most, a quarterback or Josh Allen friendly, getting him the open running lanes when he wants to run and getting receivers open. And the offense as a whole has benefited. They've had over 350 net yards in both of their games. Again, that's not great offensive numbers, but when you were finishing games with less than 200 net yards last year, I mean, anything is an improvement. and Josh Allen, I said on a past podcast, like, Josh Allen's never going to be a 60% passer or a 63% passer. Look at me now. He's a 64% passer through two games. And hey, I really think he's shown signs of improvement. Mike Clay said it, I think, last week on a podcast. It looks like the analytics community is going to be wrong about Josh Allen. And hey, I was against Josh Allen before they drafted him, and now I'm thinking this is a really talented player who's very committed to improving. We saw yesterday, playing his best game as a professional, that he has made massive strides from even the end of last season, and I think that's only going to continue because he has that mindset where he really wants to grow. I just think this was Allen's best game, and I think it's only going to get better from here. So I'll go to you, Rich. Anything to add on Josh Allen?
I mean, like you were saying about those designed run plays, it's really refreshing to see that Brian Daboll and the Bills have, you know, they understand that he has this ability to run the ball, but they want to make it, you know, him use this ability in a safe way. You know, with that designed sweep run for his touchdown where he scooted into the end zone. That's such a fantastic play call. You know he wants to run it, you know, when he gets Josh Allen, it's statistically, he runs the ball more when it's third down or when he's in the red zone. He's just moving his feet a lot and trying to make plays. And for them to recognize that ability and try to work it into the offense, that's huge. That's a huge step for him, you know, keeping him safe and off the ground. But overall, I mean, he's playing much better. I mean, the Bills have the ninth, they're averaging right now, you know, before Monday Night Football, that might change, but they're averaging the ninth highest yards per game total on offense, and I think they're 11th in points per game right now. Granted, you're playing the Jets and the Giants, and they, you know, they're not incredible defenses you're playing right now, but to be able to do that with a guy that's coming into a second year that some touted as, you know, probably a bust, is huge.
McKenna, anything to add on Josh Allen?
Not really. Yeah, no, when the Bills drafted Josh Allen, I was mixed emotions because everything, like half the people were saying he's going to be the worst NFL quarterback in starting, like, in NFL history, or he's going to, you know, be the next Jim Kelly and lead the Bills to the promised land, which obviously probably is going to be right in the middle. But yeah, he's improved so much throughout the season, and his command of the offensive line, the command of the offense, and how he is just, yeah, throwing the ball away and not chucking it in the middle of the field when he can either take the short, like take the short to intermediate, or just throw it away. We saw him do that once against the Jets in the third quarter, where he just was rolling out to his right and just threw it down the field without even really looking, it looks like. And then in the preseason against I think it was the Lions where he had that.
Yeah, the Lions game.
Yeah, we were all, like, in Slack just complaining about it because that's, I think you said it, Kyle, that's a week three throw of last season where he just chucks it down the field. But the fact that he is throwing, like, 63%, like, he's at 63% passing percentage, whatever, is a good sign. It's a massive improvement, and I think hopefully the Bills will see more of that improvement against the Bengals, who look like a very poor defensive team.
Oh, they're bad.
The real test will be New England. It always is. But because they have such a strong defense and Bill Belichick is such a defensive guru. So I think even if the Bills don't beat the Patriots, if he performs well, you know, like a similar performance to today from Sunday, I think that's a really, really good sign.
Yeah, I agree. And just to go a little further into the 63% completion percentage here, I don't even know if that's a sign of better accuracy. I think it's more a sign of improved decision-making and having better players around him who can make plays and can actually catch
Andre
the
football. Holmes in the middle of the field.
No, exactly. No Kelvin Benjamin who's given up when the ball's over his head.
Oh, my gosh.
That was a good time. That was a good time. But, look, I've always thought Allen's accuracy concerns have been a little bit overblown. Yes, he does have a few air balls every now and again, but I think his accuracy is something you can work with. It's good enough to work with if you put the players around him and put him in the positions to succeed. And the Bills have done that thus far this year, and it's worked out. They're 2-0. And also, just, it's fun. Look, I try to say I'm not a Bills fan, that I try to be objective. I am objective in when I'm trying to look at the team and be objective in how I feel about them. But, you know, I'm from Buffalo, so it's nice when the city's feeling nice about the Bills. And it's really refreshing to see, like, in the lead up to this week, New York reporters writing articles like the Bills should look, or the Giants should look at what the Bills did with Josh Allen for how they handled Daniel Jones. Mm. Or then you see after the game yesterday, a New York reporter asks Josh Allen, you know, you could have gone to one of the New York teams. How does it feel to perform well in New York? You're like, there's this shifting narrative, or I feel there's this shifting narrative around the league right now where it's like, okay, we were wrong about Josh Allen. He's the real deal. So let's just get behind him and kind of promote him as this just insane athlete and just fun, charismatic guy that he is. Let's stop dogging on him. Let's stop saying he's not going to make it because he is playing well. He's proving us wrong. So instead of just, like, ignoring it and being ignorant and saying, no, he's not good, let's just say, okay, we were wrong, and let's make money here. Let's actually promote him for what he is. So it's cool to see because the Bills have never had a quarterback like that. I mean, the last one I can think of is, like, Kyle Orton. It was ironically because he had a mustache. Yeah. Like, Tyrod Taylor wasn't marketable. Yeah. Nathan Peterman, but that was because he threw five interceptions. It's always been ironic with the Bills. They've never had a genuinely very good quarterback, and it looks like Allen's well on his way to being that. So I think that's our takeaways from this game. It was a dominant game. Bills should have won, and they did. Singletary looked good. New additions looked good. And Josh Allen played what I felt was his best game as a professional. So before we get out of here, quickly, I will give a Hofbrauhaus update.
Hey, I was going to say, we need one.
Yeah, dude, when I don't give the Hofbrauhaus update, there's no fights anymore.
I mean, well, there was a fight in the game, sort of.
Who were the
Cody Ford.
Cody Ford, who was he on, though?
Any, just the Giants.
Ogletree, I think it was.
Yeah, I think it was Ogletree.
Okay, Alec Ogletree wins. I like Cody Ford, but he's not...
I think Cody Ford wins, man.
I think Cody Ford is just a monster, so I think he would just,
he
like,
was standing,
just freak out.
No, he seemed like he was really, really aggressive there and wanted to. It was good to see him stand up, though. That was good.
Put him in the octagon, though, where Alec Ogletree hasn't just tackled Josh Allen. Put him in the
Fair
octagon. Emotions level. I don't know. I could see Feliciano beating a lot of people in the octagon, but I don't know. But then just... quickly, because we're at 58 minutes, we're going to make it over an hour again, so we're truly making it the variety hour, but Hofbrauhaus update. So the other night, my family and I went out to dinner. We went to Touton. It is impossible to talk about that restaurant. and not sound like a total asshole about the restaurant. Oh, it's delicious.
That's a New Orleans place, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the Cajun place.
Yes, yeah.
Cajun. I had some Nashville hot chicken.
Ooh.
Delicious sauce. Dude, I almost went to the... I almost busted into the kitchen to get the chef and be like, what kind of sauce is this? I want this sauce. But,
great
so, yeah,
drinks
I,
there, too.
I didn't drink. I'm a non-drinker now. After after Brad's birthday party last week, I'm taking a bit of a break from drinking. I went quite hard. But then, yeah, we went to Touton, and then afterwards, we, drove around the city of Buffalo a little bit because my mom rarely goes downtown. So we were just like, hey, here's what's happening downtown. We drove
she's
past
like,
the
dangerous.
Hopper House. she was at that phase maybe like 3 or 4 years ago. We've convinced her over the years. No, Buffalo's a city. It's just a normal city. It's very cool. We drove past Hopper House and they're going to town. They are seriously trying to get this thing done.
They must be listening to the pod.
I hope so. I mean, they are working to try to hit that opening date of last month.
we want that sponsorship.
Look, that's really why I'm doing the Hopper House update this week because I mean, hey, there's windows now, and they have windows. They have windows. It's going to be an approved restaurant. It's going to be an actual restaurant. It looks like, but.
Wow.
Look, I don't know who I have to talk to about getting this Hopper House update. You don't even have to pay me. You don't even have to give me free food or drinks. Mm-hmm. Just let me say at the beginning of the podcast, the Kyle Selege Variety Hour brought to you by Hopper House. Who do I have to talk to? If anyone's listening to this and they know who I can talk to, put me in contact with them because that's all I want in life. Is a Hopper House sponsorship on this podcast. And then watch, I'll go there and I'll hate it. And I'll be like, ah.
Can I cancel this contract?
Yeah, all of this was for naught. But I have a theory of how this is going to end. So, look, there was some stadium talk last year. Or not last year, last week, right? With they're not releasing the stadium survey results to the public. And John Warrow tweets like, I don't know why people are reporting on this. It's not new and it's not news. And it's like, sorry, John Warrow. I didn't know you were the deciding body on what news is. I didn't know you knew that everyone knew that they weren't releasing the results to the public. I like John Warrow. He was a nice guy to me when I was there. But that was just, hey, it's news. It's news.
He's
people
really
didn't
on
know.
Brand. On brand tweet.
It was on brand of John Warrow. But so yeah, John Warrow, nice guy. That tweet just irked me a bit though. So regardless, back to Hopper House. That the Hopper House is kind of akin to the location to the potential location of the Bills Stadium. So what's going to happen is it's going to open like in 2021, like a year and a half from now. I'm going to go there. I'm going to love it. It's going to do gangbusters business. Everyone's going to love Hopper House. And then 2 months later, the Bills are going to buy the land and destroy it for their stadium.
I mean, I've said before, I don't think it's going to be that popular in Buffalo. I just don't think that Buffalo is the type of people that are going to want to go and spend $18 on a big stein of beer and some brats. They'll go once, but yeah. Long term, like in St. Petersburg, it's the same thing. It's at first it was really crowded there. A couple months later, once everyone, you know, the hype went down a little bit, everyone maybe got a chance to go there. Not very crowded after that.
Really?
Just a very sad German band playing on the balcony while ordering sherry. It's good. Good pretzels though.
I could see it. Look, it's going to be, I think it's really going to rely on, like, Sabres games, to be honest, because it's not in the bar location.
No.
It's not on Chippewa, not in Allentown, not in the Elmwood Village.
Wait, you're saying that vacant neighborhood is not the bar area?
I'm saying you don't go there for a good time. You can't really include it on a bar crawl. It's down the street.
No.
It's
bar
down
drive.
The street. Yeah, exactly. It's down the street.
We do not condone that.
Don't do it. Or unless you want to invite me, but otherwise don't do
unless
it.
You have an Uber.
Yeah, unless you have an Uber. Don't drink and drive, kids. But it's within walking distance of 716, the KeyBank Center. Ooh. So that's really what it's relying on. The people who want to drink before the game or after the game but don't want to go to 716 or the Labatt House, both of which are closer and cheaper and arguably better. So
I don't know if you could say 716 is cheaper.
716 sucks, man. I don't know what they were going for with 716.
I know what they were going for. They were going for the same thing Toronto has. Toronto has exactly the same thing.
Exactly the same
thing. Look, you walk in there, you're like, am I in Buffalo right now? Is this 716? It's absurd. And it's the same thing. And there's people there because people in Toronto spend money. People in Buffalo don't spend that kind of money. They go to neighborhood places. They're not going to go to that manufactured fun place, you know, like a manufactured sports bar. It's not their cup of tea.
You're right. And apparently the Labatt House is a like direct ripoff of a place in Rochester, the Genesee Brew House or whatever.
Oh, yeah. So, what are they trying to do for that? Don't disrespect New York's oldest brewery, Genesee with
the
Labatt House.
They sent barrels of beer down the goddamn Erie Canal.
Come on. There's nothing more New York than that.
I didn't even know anyone used the Erie Canal anymore.
I grew up near Rochester, so I have an affinity towards...
Towards Jenny Cream.
Jenny. I could get Jenny Cream in Oregon.
That's saying something.
It's a weird hipster thing. It's like PBR.
I guess so.
It's a weird hipster thing in Rochester, too.
Yeah, I don't know. Except it's something else. Yeah, it's just Jenny.
Jenny Cream.
Yeah, I spent a fair share of time at U of R over the past few years because my friend went there, and Jenny something else, but
it's cheap.
It's beer.
It's beer.
That's a tagline. It's beer.
That's a beer. That reminds me. There's this beer out. I think it's from Washington out here. It's called Olympia, and their tagline on the can says it's the water. And it is a low-end domestic beer. Okay. You buy it incredibly cheap, but their tagline is, it's the water. It can mean anything you want it to mean.
It's the water.
It's really open to interpretation. It's the water.
It's like have you guys had Natter Days?
Yeah.
I have not
had the Natter Days. I've had Natty Ice, Natty Light.
They're fine. They're kind of like White Claws, but for like hillbilly dudes.
That's a very accurate description.
I'd use another word to describe that, but I don't want to offend some of our listeners.
Yeah.
It's White Claw for Springville. There you go.
White Claw for Eden.
Look, I've taken shots at Springville on this podcast before, but I'll continue to. I'll go for it. But on the what I was getting at is on the Natter Day can, it says like, I think it says like strawberry lemonade drinking beer or something dumb like
drinking
that.
It's the drinking kind of beer.
Yeah, it describes it as a drinking beer.
Not the dumping out of kind of beer.
But back to whatever we were talking about. It's like Terry Pegula just walks into these random places in other cities and he's like, I want this, but in Buffalo with a Buffalo company.
We're going to make it Buffalo style.
Yeah. He walked into Real Sport in Toronto and was like, we're going to make it Buffalo style. Yep. How so? We're going to make this, but name it 716. Good job, Terry. All right. He walks into the Genesee Brew House. We're going to make this Buffalo style. How so? Labatt.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's the podcast for this week, guys.
Beautiful.
I thought it was we had fun here today on this podcast. So
it's been fun.
But it ain't been real fun. So, Rich, where can people find you on Twitter? Are you back on the Twitter yet?
I am not back on the Twitter yet, but they can find me on there by Rich Kowalski. They can find BillsWire on there at the BillsWire. They can find me in Portland, Oregon, if they want to find me. But you know, let me know first.
Yeah, tell them you're coming. Well, how can they get in contact with you if you're not on Twitter? Add them on LinkedIn.
Add me on LinkedIn. Oh my! Find my MySpace. Bills game next week. Bills game next Sunday should be interesting, though. I mean, Bengals are a team. They could be 1-1 if you know they would have won Week 1, but it's a game you got to win. Home opener. They're going to be hyped up. They can't let it get the best of them. It's going to be big.
I mean, their defense is bad, and their offense is without AJ Green. So Andy Dalton's been passing for numbers, but they suck.
Yeah, it's just another one of those. It's just one of those where you're like, you got to win this game.
It's a trap game. It really is. But, mm-hmm. I mean, if you are a potential playoff team, you got to beat the Bengals in your home opener. Absolutely. You just have to. So, McKenna, where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me at McKenna Middle, I think. I think it's just at McKenna Middle, yeah. I don't know. My Instagram one is at, I think, McKenna underscore Middle. And I confuse them because they're too similar for my own good.
Yeah. Got to get on a, you got to get some brand, not, I don't even, I can't think
cohesion.
Of the word. Cohesion. That,
yeah,
that,
it, that's the thing. It, they're too, it's too cohesive, so I don't remember which one is which, but I'm pretty sure it's at McKenna Middle. But yeah, I just tweet about just random nonsense. I tweet about the Bills, tweet about Manchester United, you know.
Ooh.
Hey, ooh. Hey, come on, come on.
Boy.
Yeah, and if you want to find me in lovely Potsdam, New York.
Ooh, Potsdam.
Yeah, just it's great up here. It's definitely,
you know
why
they call it Potsdam?
Why?
I don't know. Do you?
Potsdam. There's so many pots. God damn. But yeah, just, I don't know. Add me on LinkedIn. Sure. Do that too.
Yeah, you can find me on WhatsApp, on Cash App, on Venmo.
Yeah.
Add me wherever you want to. You can find me on Twitter at Kyle Selegi. Rich plugged the Twitter, so I'll plug the Instagram and Facebook. The Instagram is at the Bills Wire, and then the Facebook is at Bills Wire. Make sure to read the Bills Wire articles, billswire.usatoday.com. Yeah, read the content, fam. Listen to the Bills Wire podcasts hosted by Matt and Jeremy. Listen to this podcast. I mean, if you've made it this far, you did listen to this podcast.
Like,
but
like, praise be to you if you've listened this far.
I think it was a decent podcast.
Yeah, it was good. It just got off the rails a couple times, but
hey, that's fine.
It's content.
That's what you get here. That's what you get on the Kyle Selegi Variety Hour. Wouldn't live up to its name if we didn't
talk about it.
Damian Lillard and Hoffer House. So I think that'll do it for today. Rate 5 stars, please, on whatever you're using. If you're on Spotify, you can't do that, but hey, whatever. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Goodbye.